Now, if it seems to you like Congress isn't working quite like it used to, you're not wrong. A lot has changed over the last 30 years about how things operate in the Capitol and what lawmakers are able to accomplish. A new report from ProPublica and the Washington Post crunched the numbers on everything from amendment votes to committee hearings and found that many of those key measures of the legislature trending downward. It's been due in large part to a series of rule changes enacted by both Republicans and Democrats. Derek Willis is a news applications developer at ProPublica, focusing on politics and elections. He's co-author of the piece, How Congress Stopped Working. Derek, thanks a lot for joining us.
My pleasure, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Well, Derek, I think people feel a lot of frustration out there about Congress being gridlocked and dominated by partisanship, but also maybe you feeling like, well, what are you going to do? That's Congress. It's always been that way. You tried to crunch the numbers and find out if that's really true, right?
That's right. And I can certainly sympathize with folks who do feel frustrated with Congress. And certainly Congress is set up to make big changes kind of hard to do legislatively. But what we were looking at, my co-author Paul Kane of the Washington Post and I, was basically we were looking at these kind of indicators of what rank-and-file members of Congress can do to actually impact a legislative outcome. And so, for example, one of those is voting, you know, proposing amendments and getting votes on their amendments. And that's a really key part of the process, and it's one that's really has been kind of really atrophying because leadership doesn't want to hold amendment votes, and for lots of reasons, but it's easier for them, it's more efficient for them, if you will, to just sort of restrict the number of amendments that get voted on and then also to kind of move the process along.
Yeah, can you talk about that decline in amendments? Let's focus in on that a bit. What have you seen over the last couple few decades?
Sure. So typically we looked at both the House and the Senate, and it's the same overall picture in both chambers. But let's take a look at the Senate to start with. In the Senate, you know, maybe 15 to 20 years ago, three out of every four roll call votes, you know, where senators have to actually vote yes or no, three out of four of those votes came on amendments. And so that's a large part of what the Senate actually did when it acted as a legislative body. This Congress, that's down to one in five votes is on an amendment. Partly that's because in this Congress there have been a lot more votes on judicial nominations and other nominations, but mostly judicial nominations. But even if you took out all the nomination votes, the number of amendment votes is still way down and perhaps at a historic low. It's tough to tell since we don't have every last vote that's ever occurred in the Senate since its inception, but we do know for the modern Congress, votes on amendments are at a historic low. And in the House, debate on legislation is a little bit different in the sense that it's governed by a rule that members vote on. They say, okay, here are the rules under which we're going to debate this bill. And in the House, there can be different kinds of rules. And so you can have an open rule, which means that any member can offer an amendment as long as it's a relevant amendment. And at the other end of the spectrum are closed rules in which no amendments can be offered. And in between is sort of this idea of a structured rule where you can offer some amendments, but only the ones that the party leadership allows you to offer or wants to be offered. And we haven't had an open rule on the House floor in more than 4 years, which, again, appears to be, certainly for the modern Congress, it appears to be a record. So this is sort of how the sort of standard parts of legislative debate are being choked off.
Let's talk about what that means for balance of power. You were talking about that everyday elected official, the local member of Congress, say, it sounds like then they're not one equal out of 435. The balance is much more tipped toward the leadership.
Right. And to a certain extent, rank and file members have actually willingly surrendered this, you know, their authority on this. They have said to leadership, hey, we're mostly okay with you kind of controlling not just the agenda, which leadership has almost always dominated, but also literally like how we debate things. And so what that means is that, yeah, rank and file members have a lot less sort of individual authority and agency to make things happen. And the other side of that is that party leadership has a lot more control over not just what bills come to the floor, but under what circumstances they come to the floor, and whether or not, you know, individual members can be heard with particular concerns that may be, you know, maybe they're not on the committee that produced the bill, but maybe they have a particular interest or a particular insight that they want to try and put forward. That's a lot harder to do now in both the House and the Senate.
We're talking to Derek Willis from ProPublica, co-author of the piece, How Congress Stopped Working. Derek, do we know why this change happened, why this amendment process has atrophied so significantly?
We know a good deal about why it's happened. We don't have every last answer to it, but in large part, it has stemmed from essentially the polarization, the nationalization of Congress. And so as Congress has come to reflect the broader political trends in the nation, as you know, Republicans and Democrats, the divide between them has widened. Party leaders have responded by seeking and obtaining control over the legislative debate, more and more control. And so this really started to kind of go downhill right after the 2008 election. Up until about 2008, you still had some semblance of open debate in both the House and the Senate on a fairly regular basis. But after the 2008 election, after Barack Obama becomes president, what you see is in both chambers, you see the both parties sort of turning to their bases and trying to, you know, be able to control that legislative debate, in part because they are concerned about the opposition party trying to make them look bad with maybe votes on bills or amendments that they don't want to have or that would be politically difficult. And so what we have here is, in large part, is we have leadership in both parties trying to protect their members from taking difficult votes, politically difficult votes. And what that means is that in most cases, that kind of makes it difficult to reach consensus on pretty controversial topics.
And so we see issues like, say, immigration reform, which we talk about at least almost weekly here on the show. This is an issue that Congress, multiple Congresses, have been unable to tackle. And that's another thing you look at is the rise of gridlock and Congress not being able to get much done, apart from that the personnel stuff you mentioned, approving presidential appointees.
Right. Immigration is a great example, because here's an example of a topic where a broad majority of the American public would like to see some solution, some action on this issue. And I think most legislators would like to see some action on this issue. Obviously, they differ on what that action would be, but even with that sort of momentum or kind of foundation to build on, Congress has been unable to produce a piece of legislation that it can get majority support for. And in part, that's because the parties have disagreements within the party, among Republicans and among Democrats, about what should be done. But the other part of that, and a significant part of that, is that the debate over legislation, you know, with leadership exercising a lot of control, what they want to avoid is they want to avoid surprise outcomes. And if you were to have an open debate on immigration in the House and in the Senate, it's not exactly clear what the outcome would be. And so, you know, there's some degree of thought that, well, maybe the better part of valor then is to not have that debate if we can't guarantee what the outcome is going to be.
Now, this seems like a big flaw because, right, this is a legislative body. It's supposed to be a deliberative body. That's kind of the point of having something like Congress, right? Is this a flaw as compared to how Congress is supposed to work?
I mean, I think a reasonable person could arrive at that very conclusion, because really it is there to sort of not adjudicate, really, but to legislate, to talk about issues and to propose solutions and try to, you know, reach agreement across party lines. And when you are prevented from the opportunity of reaching those agreements, then, you know, that, you know, the amount of legislating that you get to do is restricted. And as a result, you know, it's not just Congress that you know, the outcome falls on here, is that, you know, as a result, you have the executive branch saying, you know, under both Democratic and Republican presidents, looking at what Congress is doing and not doing and saying, well, okay, well, maybe we can step in here and have some action if Congress isn't going to do anything.
We'll pick up on that point coming up with Derek Willis from ProPublica, talking about a recent piece he co-authored, How Congress Stopped Working. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your opinion of Congress? If you disapprove of what they're doing, do you put their blame on certain leaders, one party, the system as a whole? Do you think that changes are needed? And if you're a supporter of a party, do you support compromise, but only from the other party? I mean, do you want your party, if you're, say, a Democrat or Republican, do you want them to compromise, or do you want them to obstruct the other side at every turn whenever possible? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue with a look at the balance of power between Congress and the president coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Derek Willis, news applications developer at ProPublica, about his report he co-authored on how Congress stopped working. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you frustrated with gridlock in Congress, with partisanship? Are there changes you think could improve the way that Congress functions? Are you worried about how rules have changed? Are you worried that the legislature has too little power now compared to the executive branch, the president? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And Derek, let's pick up on the point you left us with there. If Congress is doing less stuff, if they're not able to get stuff done, the powers of the president, the executive branch, might be expanding.
Right. I mean, it essentially creates, in some circumstances, a vacuum. And so what will happen there, the executive branch, the folks there will look at that and say, hey, they're not acting on something. Maybe we can, or maybe we should. Or if there's public demand that they should act and Congress isn't acting, then the executive branch is also, the president's also responsive to the American public. And so they often will, try to, fill that gap. I think the DACA, the immigration executive action, both by President Obama and then the immigration actions by President Trump are examples of this kind of thing.
Let's bring on a caller now. Jim is with us in Dubuque. Jim, hi.
Hi. I'm always amused at discussions about the differences between the parties. I recall some time ago that Gore Vidal wrote an essay for the Nation magazine on their State of the Union on their 125th anniversary, in which he remarked that it's people occasionally try to start a third party in this country, and they all make the fatal mistake of thinking that there was two parties to begin with. The parties don't differ on the important issues like spending money we don't have and going into wars that we have no business in. They serve corporate interests and divide and conquer the population over superfluous issues.
Jim, thanks for the call. I think a lot of people would say there are significant differences on immigration, taxes, abortion, a lot of other things, Derek. And the people in Congress that you talk to definitely see differences between themselves.
There are differences, but I think what we see and what our reporting on this piece has shown is that despite those differences, one thing that leadership of both parties and both chambers can agree on is that they would like to remain in power. In other words, they'd like to preserve the majority if they have it, or gain the majority. And so preserving the majority when you have it often, has come to mean in the last 10 years particularly, it's come to mean avoiding votes that could cost your members their seats. I think there was a pretty dramatic lesson in the passage of the Affordable Care Act by Democratic majorities that Republicans, sort of used against them in the subsequent election, and I think Democrats kind of took a lesson from that, and I think you've seen majorities be sort of more careful, their leadership be more careful about trying to avoid that kind of circumstance again going forward. That means that a lot of times they won't act.
Jim, thanks for the call. We'll go now to Al in Eau Claire. Al, hi.
Hi. My opinion is that the system is working that we have in place. It's not pretty, but it works. And I do have one question. Is has historically has balance of power shifted back and forth between legislative and executive over the past 200 years.
Gotcha, Al. Your line is not great, but Derek, he was saying, hey, we've seen the balance of power between the presidency and Congress. It's gone up and down over the years. No big deal if the pendulum is swinging one way right now.
Jim's absolutely right that the balance of power does swing back and forth. And we do see Congresses in history that are sort of more active, more aggressive about sort of asserting what they're trying to do, their prerogatives. I think what is different this time is that this is happening, I think, under presidential administrations of both parties and with congressional leaders of both parties. That, you know, I think the difference here is that it's become kind of the normal for Congress, almost regardless of who is in charge. And so, like, that I think would be my response in terms of the difference between a legislature that sometimes does seem to get, steamrolled a little bit by the executive versus, you know, when it comes back around and tries to, you know, push the executive branch around a bit.
Thanks for the call, Al. We're talking to Derek Willis from ProPublica, co-author of a report called How Congress Stopped Working. Back to your calls now. John is with us in Madison. John, hi.
Hi. I don't think that always compromising or always obstructing is the right way to go. I think you need to be discerning. Certainly, if one party wants to do something completely unethical or just plain crazy, I mean, you don't want to compromise there. I mean, what would meeting someone in the middle on slavery be like? But at the other point, if you need to compromise, you got to understand where your opponent is coming from and also look at science and evidence-based policies.
John, thanks for the call. Meeting in the middle on slavery was one of the biggest previous crises of Congress over American history, Derek. But let's get to that point he had. We should have people in Congress who can compromise or obstruct as they see fit. You talked to current and former politicians. What kind of things were they saying, Derek, about fixes they might like to see?
So some of them suggested that Congress simply needed to be together more often. So like working more often, in session more often. A lot of them talked about, especially those who are no longer in Congress, talked about a time when congressmen and women were, they socialized together in Washington or had their families live in Washington. And I'm not certain that that's something that we can sort of just magically roll back to for a bunch of different reasons. But certainly it is less likely now that a member of Congress from different parties would sort of run into each other organically on Capitol Hill because their schedules are very, very compressed, and they've got, they're traveling back and forth to their home states and districts, their voters want to see them. And so but that was one thing that people mentioned essentially was, hey, we should just be here more often and have, be in each other's presence more often, and that would help smooth the way for us to actually talk to each other and get things done.
John, thanks a lot for that call. Derek, I wonder if that is possible with the 24-hour news cycle, broad cable news networks, the internet. Everything a politician does is being scrutinized, and maybe there's a sense that they got to play to their crowd and play to the base. The handshake with the opponent today is the primary ad against them tomorrow. Is that part of the story here?
Yeah, it definitely is, in the sense that people do have to think about things that maybe they didn't have to give a lot of thought of to previously, whether that's a speech on the floor or whether that's even just, as you said, like sort of standing in with somebody, talking with them, smiling, laughing at a joke, something like that. You see that like on the House floor when people are, voting, when the House is voting, the cameras don't really pan the floor that often, but if you're in the House chamber, you can see members of Congress talking to each other and asking each other's questions and doing the things that you would kind of expect. But that's one of the few places that they can sort of do that without a lot of scrutiny. And so I think this scrutiny is part of the issue. I think also there are members of Congress who want to have that kind of audience, who want to have a national audience, and want to sort of play to that crowd. And I think, that also can hamper the ability of other folks to say, hey, that might be somebody I can work with.
Very briefly, Derek, as we wrap up, any signs of a change back in the other direction anytime soon?
So they're not totally encouraging, no, but I would say that like it has been interesting over the past couple of weeks to see, you know, we'll have a different majority in the House come January. And it's been interesting to see some of the new members of that Democratic majority try to at least push against what their leaders or presumed leaders would like to do. And I think that, you know, there is always hope that members will want to or will be maybe even motivated to, you know, act on their own rather than to cede so much authority to leadership. Because being a member of the House and the Senate, like, they are powerful positions, even if a lot of times it doesn't seem like they're, you know, that they are. There's some agency there that people can use. And so when you see people, members of Congress, actually, you know, doing the things that they can do using the rules and the platforms that they have, you know, I think there's always some hope for that could continue.
Thanks to our guest, Derek Willis. He works at ProPublica. He's co-author of the piece we've been talking about, How Congress Stopped Working.